Russia intensifies its targeting of Ukraine's cities, trapping civilians desperate to flee.
They can't leave. They're being told in 1 minute that there's going to be a humanitarian convoy for them to leave, and the next minute, Russia shells it.
Plus, we'll get an update from Poland on what's now the fastest and largest displacement in Europe since World War II, and war sends investors scrambling for financial safe havens, including the U.S. dollar. It's Monday, March 7th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russian forces have intensified their attacks on major cities across Ukraine. On Sunday, Russia attacked an evacuation route out of the capital, Kyiv, and Russian shelling interrupted the planned evacuation of some 200,000 civilians from the southern Ukrainian city of Mariupol. Russia has blamed Ukraine's government for the failed evacuations. WSJ senior reporter Drew Hinshaw says Russia's latest attacks are causing Ukraine's leaders to intensify their calls for Western support.
Civilian deaths are mounting very rapidly from Russian strikes on residential apartment buildings in cities, not just here and there, but throughout the country. And agreements to evacuate cities are falling through. And this is only 2 weeks into the war. And when you speak to Ukrainian officials about it, they say, we need a no-fly zone, we need fighter jets, we need an extreme influx of arms. And every day that those things don't happen is a day that more civilians are dying under these conditions.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has said the U.S. is looking to address Ukraine's request for combat jets, handed over by Poland, in exchange for more modern aircraft, which could involve replenishing Soviet-era jets handed over by Poland in exchange for more modern aircraft. However, Poland and other European governments worry that donating jets risks dragging them into direct conflict with Russia. Meanwhile, major companies continue to exit the Russian market, with Netflix and TikTok now joining the ranks of American Express, MasterCard, and Visa. Sources say Netflix found it too challenging to operate in Russia given new sanctions, while TikTok said it suspended video uploads from the country. TikTok's decision came after Moscow made it illegal for anyone to publish what authorities consider to be false information about the invasion of Ukraine. And the war in Ukraine is continuing to push oil prices higher amid concerns about supplies. This morning, Brent crude hit $130 a barrel, the highest level since 2008. Journal columnist Rochelle Toplensky says threats of a potential ban on Russian oil being floated by U.S. lawmakers is helping to drive today's rally.
It's hard to say whether it could go even higher until we start to see what the details would be behind any sort of ban on buying Russian oil. But it could push prices even higher. And that would potentially also flow through to the gasoline prices at the pumps, because the gasoline that we use to drive our cars and trucks is made from oil.
And we are exclusively reporting that billionaire Ryan Cohen has taken a large stake in Bed Bath & Beyond as he pushes the retailer to streamline its strategy. Cohen is the co-founder of online pet products company Chewy and also serves as chairman of video game retailer GameStop. According to a letter viewed by the Journal, Cohen is now a top five shareholder in Bed Bath & Beyond. The company has struggled with supply chain issues, and Cohen says in the letter, its existing turnaround plan has failed to stem sustained market share losses, noting that core sales dropped 14% in the most recent quarter. The war in Ukraine isn't just leading to higher energy prices or prompting multinationals to pull out of Russia. There's increasing evidence it's leading to a more profound shift for investors around the world as they move their money out of risky assets and into safer ones like treasuries and the U.S. dollar. Joining us to break down these latest trends is markets reporter Caitlin McCabe. Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you. I understand that what we're seeing right now is sometimes known as the dollar smile, which is sort of an unfortunate turn of phrase given the circumstances. But explain for us what characterizes this dollar smile and to what extent it is underway at present.
Sure. So the dollar smile is a market theory that basically says that the dollar tends to strengthen under two circumstances, and that sort of makes up both ends of the upper sloping smile. And that scenario basically says that the dollar performs well when the global economy sours and traders rush for safety. And then the other half of the smile, according to that framework, basically occurs when the U.S. economy is comparatively healthy compared to other countries' economies. And that spurs investors to race to scoop up dollar-denominated investments.
And Caitlin, how is this playing out right now?
So obviously with the war in Ukraine, there is a lot of uncertainty and investors are sort of rushing for safety, not just with the dollar, but other assets they perceive as safer as well, just given that they don't know how the war will play out, what kind of effect there will be across the continent on oil prices and a multitude of other things. And then on the other hand, there is this perception, at least for now, that the U.S. economy might be relatively insulated from the war and investors' portfolios might also be relatively insulated from the war. And so as a result, they're sort of shifting their bets back into the U.S. economy for that reason as well. So the ICE U.S. dollar index is basically an index that compares the dollar against a basket of other currencies. And last week, the dollar index hit its highest level since May 2020, and it had a weekly jump of over 2%. And that represented one of the biggest weekly jumps that we've seen in the last 5 years.
And if I understand correctly, Caitlin, this seems to be part of a wider trend with investors putting money into additional safe havens beyond the dollar, like gold and bonds. Is that correct?
Exactly. So in times of uncertainty, it's not atypical to see investors rushing towards assets they perceive as safer. So the dollar is one, gold is another. And as you pointed out, treasury bonds are a third. And so we saw all of those perform the way that we would expect last week. Gold jumped, I think, over 4%. Treasury bonds saw their biggest one-week yield decline since March 2020, when the coronavirus, of course, was causing a lot of fear and panic among investors. So things sort of are behaving like the traditional playbook right now.
That was markets reporter Caitlin McCabe. Caitlin, thanks for the update.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Russian attacks on major cities in Ukraine are fueling a civilian exodus that's worsening by the day. We'll speak to our reporter in Warsaw, Poland, about what's now become the fastest growing refugee crisis in Europe since World War II after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
It's the 12th day of the war in Ukraine, and the UN now estimates that 1.5 million people have already left the country. This is now the largest displacement of people in Europe since World War II. But some could not even leave Ukraine for safety. Local authorities say that plans for humanitarian corridors to evacuate the cities of Mariupol and Volnovakha in the south have collapsed again amid Russian shelling. To discuss this growing refugee crisis, we're joined by WSJ senior reporter Drew Hinshaw, who's in the Polish capital of Warsaw. Hello, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. The Russian bombing of cities is prompting a mass exodus of civilians across Ukraine. How difficult is it right now to get across Ukraine or even out of the country?
It's extremely difficult. There are very few trains out of Kyiv. Getting to the capital in the first place is nearly impossible if you're in some of these cities that are being currently shelled by Russian artillery. When there are trains, they are jam-packed. I mean, standing room only. You're on a train ride that would normally take 2 or 3 hours. For 18 hours, the train just crawls forward, stops for hours at a time, lights are off, curtains drawn, and there's no cell reception on the train.
Drew, we are hearing reports of people trapped in cities in eastern Ukraine, which we should remind people is very far from its borders to Europe in the west. What information do you have about where people are trying to flee from and what conditions they're facing?
People, I've been standing at the border for the past week and people are coming from everywhere in Ukraine, but you definitely notice that the people who are making it across in a large number are coming from the west, from Lviv, other cities in the west of Ukraine, where so far there hasn't been a lot of fighting. Getting from the far east of the country is a real gauntlet there. If you're in one of these cities that's being shelled, it's almost impossible to leave. We spoke to a mother of a 12-year-old boy that had tried to go get her son back. He lives near one of the nuclear plants that was, the area was being shelled, and she just couldn't get there and had to go home without her 12-year-old son.
Drew, there have been attempts to establish a humanitarian corridor in southern Ukraine, but that has collapsed within hours following Russian shelling. How is that affecting the flow of refugees?
They can't leave. They're being told in one minute that there's going to be a humanitarian convoy for them to leave, and the next minute, Russia shells it. We had on Sunday, there was in the town of Irpin, there was a line of yellow school buses lined up to take Ukrainian civilians to safety. But then Russia started shelling and people ran for cover. And when the shelling was done, you know, an entire family was lying there dead. A mother, a man and their child next to a monument commemorating Ukraine's losses fighting Germany in World War II. This is the kind of thing that's happening. And it's become very frustrating for Ukrainian civilians who want clarity on when and how they can get out.
And what effect do these reports have? Are they leading people to want to leave or to a fear that doing so isn't safe, and thus they would maybe prefer to stay?
You can see the urgency with which people want to leave in the numbers that are arriving every day at a small border checkpoint in Poland called Medyka. It's a record every single day. Every day breaks the record from the day before. Huge numbers are also headed to Slovakia, Moldova, Romania, Hungary, smaller numbers to Russia.
What conditions are people fleeing Ukraine finding when they arrive in countries like Poland or some of the smaller countries you've also mentioned?
There are volunteers there to greet them, to pass out warm sausages and hot coffee and donuts. The Polish society and Hungarian society and Slovak society are extremely rallied behind Ukraine. Everywhere you look, the society is completely sympathetic with Ukrainians. People are opening up their homes to these refugees. The problem is, in 10 days, more than 1 million people showed up in Poland. I don't know that any country in the world can immediately handle that. When you stand there at the border and you just watch every single second a mom walk across the border, rolling her suitcase and dragging small children, you really get a sense of just the vastness of this refugee flow.
And finally, Drew, what political or diplomatic pressure is this continued influx of refugees into European countries having on efforts to resolve the war in Ukraine?
We're a week into this war, a little over a week, almost 2 weeks. And every single day, Europe, Western countries, NATO allies become somehow a little bit more involved. They're shipping more arms. They're talking about sending fighter planes. And the refugee flow pictures into this. There's a limit on if Ukrainians leave in the numbers that Syrians left Syria, for example, we'd be talking about 20, 30 million people. That's a huge number of people. And I think that it forces Europe to think a bit creatively. They don't want to become a party to this conflict, but they really can't allow one of the biggest countries on the continent, Ukraine, a country of 44 million people, to become like Grozny after the Chechen wars, or Syria or Aleppo during the Syrian war.
That was WSJ senior reporter Drew Hinshaw joining us from Warsaw. Drew, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And finally, just because social media plays an ever-increasing role in our daily lives, that doesn't mean we want our entire social media history to follow us around forever. And considering that more than half of employers told the job site CareerBuilder in 2018 that they decided not to hire candidates because of content on their profiles, the case for purging old posts starts to look more compelling. Our personal tech reporter Dalvin Brown says social media companies are now reading the room.
So Instagram is one of the latest social networking sites to make it easier to delete posts. And the company launched a tab called Your Activity, which allows you to see your history of posts and bulk select several of them to delete or to archive so that other people can't see them. So say you joined Instagram in 2013, you can populate those at the top and then select each of the photos that you would want to get.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.